Hi there. Who's this?
Hi, it's Trinity.
Oh, hey you. How's it going?
Hi.
Are you good?
Yes.
Yeah, how was teaching this morning?
It was really good. It's a student of mine that has been with me since the very beginning, so we just worked out together, which was excellent.
Mm-hmm.
So good. Felt good. And then I walked the dog. Oh, yeah.
Awesome. Hi, who's this?
Hi, it's Darlene.
Oh, hello. How are you?
Hi, good, thanks.
Oh, good. Yay, I knew there was going to be a lot of people on today. Who's this?
Hi there, it's Julie.
Hey, Julie, how's it going?
Good.
Good. I love you right now. I love you so much right now.
I've been rereading the first couple pages.
Oh, my God. Hi. Okay, so we'll wait and just – this is – I'm going to just rant for a moment, but obviously we're still waiting for folks to come on. I think Rachel might be joining us, and Allison is coming on. Oh, there's somebody else. Oh, good heavens. I love it, that sound. I'm like in heaven right now. Who else just came? Holy mackerel. It's like raining people.
No, it's
hi, this is Senta.
Hi, Senta.
Hi.
Who else came on?
It was Jill.
Oh, hey, Jill.
And Kimberly.
Yeah. And Kimberly, yay!
Hey!
All right, awesome. Hey, Kimberly, I've just been thinking about you just because I haven't heard from you much in the last month or so, and I'm like, I miss that girl. Where is she?
She's about to be activated for a snowstorm.
Oh, holy moly. Well, glad that you're on. Super glad you are all on. So exciting. Holy mackerel, I cannot believe it. Who's this?
This is Bonnie.
Hi, Bonnie.
Hello.
Okay, I'm still expecting Allison, maybe Sarah, and who else did I say? Maybe Rachel. And it's only 2:02. You guys are amazing. I have so much love and gratitude for you today. Right this second. So I was about to go on a little rant. I was saying how much I love Julie Lenoka right now. She's been like
Who is she, Chantal?
Julie from the mentoring program. Julie here with us. She's on the call, and she's in Sacramento here with me.
Oh. Okay.
Julie's also in doing the 66-day portion of the self-practice program with you, Senta.
Oh, right. Yeah. I've seen her name. Yeah.
Yeah. So Julie has been my benefactor of all things delicious to read and ingest for my brain. And the newest thing is this beautiful book written by Twyla Tharp. And if you're not in the dance world, you won't have any idea who she is. Well, maybe you will. I don't know. Anyway.
No, she's written a book on creative process.
Yeah, I have it in my hand. It's called The Creative Habit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, learn it and use it for life. And so Julie and I spoke, I don't know, what day is it? Early this week, Monday, I think. And I ordered it while we were talking on the phone. And it arrived this morning. And I have read the first 4 pages. And I'm just totally in love with it. So you can all expect to hear a lot from me on the topic. Which is not a new topic for me, right? This last year, we've really touched on and worked on a lot the idea of practice and habit. And I'm really excited about continuing that conversation today, in fact, just in a very small way, but ongoing. Who just came on the line?
It's Rachel.
Oh, hey, stranger.
Hi.
How are ya?
I'm okay.
Yeah, okay. Well, good to hear your voice.
Yes.
So, yeah, so there's a lot of us on the call today, so I'm going to get right to it. Make sure you mute yourself, please. It's *6. Hi, who else is there?
Hi, this is Erin.
Oh, Karen Buchanan. Good to hear your voice.
I can, but I'm just warning everybody, I'm picking two 13-year-old boys up in a second, and I'm driving them to the state park.
Okay.
I'm not talking.
Okay, okay.
Because I have you on mute, so you don't have to hear all that mess.
Perfect, perfect. Yes, everybody get yourself on mute for the pleasure and enjoyment of everyone else. so do
yeah,
that.
No, before I mute myself, I just want to tell you that I just bought the book as well.
Oh, you did?
Yes, just now.
Awesome. I love it. Yes, very good. Okay, so everybody's on mute, and it's a really exciting day. I don't know. I'm like, I have been instantly elated for like the last 8 minutes. The moment that the first teacher came on the line, and I don't know why. It's just like, I don't know why, but I'm super jazzed up to be on the line with so many of you today. It's been a long time since we've had this big of a turnout, so that's super exciting. It's our first call of 2016. We have many new teachers joining us this year, which is so deeply affirming and thrilling to me. And one of them is on the call today already. She like signed up last night and this morning, and she sent me an email and she said, can I be on the call today? And so, Lindsay, why don't you unmute yourself for a moment? This is Lindsay, everybody. Want to say hi?
Hello. Hi. Nice to meet everybody, kind of.
Yes. And for those of you who are going to be with us on Sunday at Darlene's, Lindsay's going to be there with us. So that's very cool. So welcome, Lindsay. We're not going to do any kind of lengthy introductions in the moment. We're going to save that. But
perfect.
Just want to welcome you. And what I told Lindsay a little bit ago is she's like the perfect candidate. She just decided, she did it, she signed up, and she's on the call, and it all took like, I don't know, not that very long. So I'm really excited to have her. She's in Sacramento, so that's really awesome for me. Let's see, what else did I want to kind of start with? Usually we do a check-in, and I would love to do that today. But if we do that, we all have to be willing to keep our responses pretty darn concise. And if you start to blather on, I'm going to cut you off with a lot of love and compassion. But I do want to do a check-in. Here's what I'd like to check in about. And there is no possible way I'm going to know who came on when. I don't even know who all is on. I didn't track it very well. So we'll see how this goes. I would like you just to share how you're showing up today, a word or a short phrase. Yeah, that's kind of our MO. How are you coming to the call? What are you bringing with you? And share one thing that you feel most excited about in your teaching right now. And it can be infinitesimal. It can be so small and seemingly insignificant. But when you reflect on this, just what's the one thing in the moment that when you think about it in relationship to your teaching, you feel like you get excited and you get lit up a little bit and you get giddy. I think that's what I want us to share. So I'm going to be kind and not have Lindsay go first, even though she was first one on. I'm going to have Trinity go first. And then Lindsay, and then I'll just see if I can remember who all is here. But I will try to call on you. If I don't call on you, then you can shout out, take yourself off mute and shout your answer out. But we'll start with Trinity.
Okay, I'm showing up today feeling pretty darn refreshed or invigorated. My teaching success right now is that I taught today, which feels good because I haven't been teaching much at all. Pretty sporadic. So that's my success, and I'm teaching again tomorrow.
Yay! Woohoo! Awesome! Thank you. Okay, Lindsay, now you're up. That didn't buy you much time, but
that's okay. I am feeling, I've been feeling very tired because I've been doing a lot, but it's all very productive towards my goals. And one of them is just finding this program and observing a lot of places. And so I feel very excited about it. Although it's very tiring, it's like good tired.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm just excited to be here and take it all in.
Awesome. Well, we're very happy to have you. Thank you. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
Uh-huh. So now we're just going to roll with it. I'm going to call on Julie because I know she's on the line.
Hi. I'm showing up really, really excited. And my teaching success is that I've been working with a client who has a spinal cord injury, so his movement is limited. But I think we're making some good progress with getting him some motion in his hands and him understanding his anatomy a little more.
Awesome.
So that's very gratifying.
Totally. So cool. And at some point in the not too distant future, Julie, we need to maybe have you talk more about the work that you're doing, with, the folks at Absolute Center and with this gentleman. So yeah, let's keep that in our attention at some point. So thank you. Darlene.
Hi there. What I am excited about is, seeing people come to me with a smile on their face and feeling better. It's just, I can't think of anything better than that. It just makes me feel so happy.
Yeah.
That the process works, you know?
Yes.
Just, so that's kind of it.
Yeah, totally. Awesome. Just so perfect. Thank you. So, Jill?
Hi. I am here today excited as well. I have taken over something that was she is out. She had a knee replacement. And the people that she works with are not my general population. Mm-hmm. They're a little bit older and maybe have some injuries or a little more sedentary. And I'm so excited because two of them have told me how great I've made them feel.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
Great. Good for you. Such an awesome experience to be having too, right after having gotten your certificate, right? Like,
yes,
out of
exactly.
The, yeah, yeah, out of the gates. That's awesome, Jill. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Let's, Kimberly.
Sorry, it took me a while to get my phone off of mute.
That's okay.
I'm showing up like the new year didn't start until I got on this call. So it's your son's voice. That's a long way to say how I'm showing up, but I'm really excited about the fact that I've stuck with my sales funnel and actually shared it with a couple of people who were like, no, that's too much for us. And I was like, well, they're not my clients right now. Mm-hmm. And I got my first private client and my first monthly paying client.
Yay. Good for you. Way to stick with it. That's so exciting. Congratulations.
Thanks.
Yeah. Great. Good, good. Okay. Well, all of that and wishing you warmth and safety in the weather, whatever's going on over there for you guys. Whoever doesn't know, most of you know, but Kimberly is in the D.C., Washington, D.C. area. All right, darling. Well, thank you. Good to hear your voice. Let's see, Bonnie.
Today I am feeling very happy today, and I would say for 2016, all my goals with my clients and homework have been implemented, and everything is going along just great.
Awesome. Way to go. thank you. Great. Bonnie and I have been communicating an awful lot about our May mentoring workshop, which is taking place at her studio in Carson City, Nevada. And that's super exciting. And we're going to be talking a bit more about that on Sunday, if you'll be there on Sunday, and just in general, starting to organize some details around all of us getting there, because I'm also doing a workshop the next day, Sunday. So, yeah, start to maybe put that in your attention. But that's really been exciting because we've gotten some good response already. So, great. Thanks, Bonnie. Senta.
Hello?
Hi.
Okay, hi. I'm coming with some excitement around the possible space for a shared space with some other, another movement person and some manual therapy people, so like working in a, as a group,
mm-hmm.
in a, so having a space for max-type classes and also having a large office for the movement and Pilates stuff. So
awesome.
Kind of that's in the possible works. I don't know yet where, but and then I'm excited that my business all of a sudden is growing and I have more clients than I've ever had.
Woohoo!
Really cool. And I just got a client today, a woman who's 63 and she has Parkinson's.
Uh-huh.
And I'm really, really excited about working with her.
Awesome. Good for you. That's so exciting.
Yeah, I have some questions about it. But
yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you, Senta.
Uh-huh.
Erin, are you able to come on? Are you in the midst of kid chaos?
Can you hear me? Yeah, you can hear me now.
Yeah.
No, we have just the boys are here, but that's fine.
Okay.
So I'm showing up actually doing very well today and really just kind of excited about, you know, finally feeling like, A, my confidence is getting there, and B, that I know enough stuff to feel confident about my teaching.
Mm-hmm.
Put your seatbelts on, please. And, don't you feel like you're like on an airplane with jeans, you know, about
I love it.
Buckle your teeth
off. Feels like that.
Okay, anyway. So I feel like I'm finally, you know, feel a little bit more at peace and not so scrambled and trying to figure out what I'm doing, what I'm supposed to be doing.
Uh-huh.
Yay.
Awesome. Excellent. Oh, good to hear your voice too.
Likewise.
Yeah.
I love talking to.
Hi.
It's like, okay, Chantel is Chantel.
Oh, hi, Chantel.
Hi. All right, thanks, Erin.
Okay, I'm going to put you people back on mute.
Awesome. And then I think Rachel is maybe the last one. If I've missed anybody, when Rachel's done, you can just jump in.
It's Rachel.
Hi.
Hi. So I'm feeling sort of just mildly resigned to my journey fate these days. I've been sick for like a month.
My son has
been like bringing germs from left and right. You know, California has been under rain and indoor, but it's not been bad. It's just been forever. So I'm just sort of accepting it and knowing I'll get better someday.
Yeah.
Yeah, excited about my teaching. I've been able to kind of teach through it all, and it's exciting that going into it and teaching can be so uplifting and invigorating,
mm-hmm.
even if you don't feel good.
Yes.
Like if you just kind of throw yourself in and commit to it, like wonderful things can happen between you and the energy of your students. You know, it's like going up on stage.
Yeah.
And I'm just grateful that I you know, teach in a place where there is that great energy that could be fed. And even, you know, when I'm kind of sick and I don't know my left or my right, I have beautiful, forgiving students who still get a lot of the experience and come see me again next week.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Oh, good. Good, good. Sorry you've not been feeling well, but hopefully it's you're not long for it. Hopefully it'll go away soon. Great. Thanks, Rachel. Is there anybody else that I've missed? Okay. Hey, not bad. So we have a case study, and we have a case study, and before we talk about it, however, no, let's just talk about it. Let me read it real quick for those of you who maybe didn't see it on the Facebook post. This came up in our Reformer 3 weekend that we just had here in Sacramento. I taught Reformer 3 at Epicenter, and Trinity was with us. Jill was with us for one day, and with a couple of other really lovely teachers, two of whom may be joining, one for sure, and two perhaps joining us for the mentoring program here in the next month or so. So the case study actually comes from one of these gals who's been working with this client. So here it is, female, middle 20s, very thin build with a protruding belly. So when she stands up, you can see she's very lordotic, protruding belly, and kyphotic. She has a tremendous amount of difficulty finding neutral. So my understanding is that it's difficult to find neutral, I mean painful, or very, very uncomfortable to even find neutral in a, for the most part, we were talking about being supine, right? So being on your back. Rarely ever able to maintain it without pain. Significant pain in the low back when the legs are at tabletop. So held at that directly 90 degree. This student has been doing Pilates, and her previous instructor was insistent on working in neutral, which ultimately caused her some additional pain. And and then the gal who's working with her now has begun to work in imprinted, like a supported neutral, you know, with a towel or a pad or something rolled up underneath the low back. And from when we started the conversation on Saturday, the bottom line was that still was not really keeping her in some kind of lordotic curve at all, is my impression. And Trinity was there, so she can fill in anything I'm missing. But my understanding was that even the supported neutral was really not doing it for her. And you know, we were talking about being in neutral for something like toe taps or knee stirs or footwork, right? There are a couple of things that kind of come to my attention or come up for me when I start to think about this. And I wanted to just preface, we'll go into ideas from everybody momentarily, but the one thing I feel like the best thing I ever have learned or decided for myself about neutral is that neutral is a total myth. Okay, neutral, I don't mean to like shatter some of you, but in my opinion, neutral is not a fixed position, right? So it's totally malleable, which means if the body is moving, there is no such thing as a neutrally held spinal position, right? So the body moves through neutral if the body is in motion. And that neutral happens on a scale, on a range. So, I think about somebody who comes in to the studio like this gal, and she has these habituated spinal curves, right? So it's going to be a matter of her spine, just based on her anatomy and the way she was born, right? The design of her spine, but also perpetuated over time by her movement patterns. Her particular frame is going to swing her in one direction. You know, when we have narrow shoulders and narrow hips, we're very thin, sometimes that creates a habit of movement or a pattern of movement, which can perpetuate the curves of the spine, either deepening too much or flattening out too much. I think, Trinity, can you come on the line? Can you unmute yourself for a moment so you can just be here? Thank you. Do you remember, did she say the gal was hypermobile? Can you remember? Or am I making that up?
You think for a second here.
Yeah.
Wasn't there also something about she'd had a lot of abdominal surgery? I don't remember that. Okay. I must have been thinking of something else then.
Yeah, not this one. Mm-mm.
Chantel?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's Jill.
I
remember her saying she was very hypermobile.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, okay. Jill was there too because that was Saturday. Thank you, Jill. Yeah. So please chime in to anything that I'm missing or, you know, anything I've forgotten. So this was an interesting piece for me because, right away there was some connection being made by the teacher. I think that the hypermobility was directly linked to the lordosis, which is may or may not be true, but I used the opposite example of my own self because I am hypermobile, and when I came to Pilates, I had zero curvature in my spine. I mean, to the point where I was having low back pain because I didn't have any lordosis at all, and so the weight and effort was not being distributed well across my low back and sacrum, and so if the case study gal that we're talking about. It lives on one end of the spectrum in terms of neutral, then I was living on the other end. So the point is just that when a student comes into us for the first time, they're coming into us with their current habitual neutral, right? So that means the position that they default to, or you can even think about it as a default neutral, it's the position in which they're going to be moving from in a lot of different weight-bearing positions, right? So potentially you're going to see it show up in supine, in prone, in kneeling, in side-lying, right? It's just going to keep showing up no matter what position they're in. So the lordosis and the inability to move more toward an elongated low back is not necessarily directly linked to the hypermobility. So what I wanted to say was the thing about the default neutral, right? So a body comes in and they have their defaults. And we know as teachers, we get a sense over time right away, and then it develops over time what functional neutral is. And even functional neutral is going to look different depending on the body, right? The shape of the body. Because all of us are born, you know, our skeletal anatomy is different. It's a little bit different. The shapes of our bones, the depths of the joint, all of those things can vary. So even a student's functional neutral, their ideal neutral is, it's not going to look the same, right, on everybody. But it's this interesting process of going from their default neutral and in some way over time trying to get them to be strong in a more functional neutral. And so I just wanted us to I wanted to throw that out there and just have us keep that in mind because what came up on Saturday was the previous teacher was adamant about putting this student in what she thought was the best anatomical neutral, right? The best functional neutral. And we hear over and over again, you know, to teach neutral and identify neutral when you're at supine, when you're on your back, by aligning the two ASIS, right, the anterior hip bones and the pubic bone on an even plane parallel to the floor, which is a fine, totally justified starting place. However, it's faulty thinking to believe that a student can come in with their default neutral and even be able to identify or have a felt sense of what the anatomical neutral or the functional neutral might be. And when we force them into that position and make them work in that position especially under load, we get the kind of results that this teacher and student had, which is increased pain and a lack of progress. So, Jill or Trinity, if you have anything else to add to that, please feel free, and then we'll kind of open it up to some thoughts from the group.
I don't have anything so far, Chantel.
Okay. Jill, can you think of anything else from our conversation on Saturday?
No, that's pretty much, what I understood.
Okay.
Where you are right now.
Okay. So what do we do, you guys? What do we do? We're in a position where we have a student, she's done some Pilates, it's not felt great to her, but we know that eventually, at some point, she's going to be well served to find a better spinal position, right? Greater balance through the curves of the spine. Where do we go?
This is Rachel. Can I make a comment?
Please do.
Yeah, I have a client who's lordotic, and you and I have talked about her before, and she's been quite mysterious in some ways to me, but I found having her supine is the most challenging position for her to work the abs and to work in a proper neutral, so I've had better success with her doing seated and standing work, and I can see her then, too, because it's really, I can see her back and know that she's turning her butt on and doing things. It's even a little hard. It's even a little mysterious too when you're on your back. But so like standing leg pumps, seated leg pumps. I've done the short box series, but doing it even just like in a TVA kind of situation where you put a block between your legs and you just lift up arms and do abdominals in a neutral spine.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had a lot of success. Mm-hmm. Doing that with her when laying down always, would cause pain. Not always, but a lot of times after the fact.
Yeah.
That's why we were doing it, but afterwards.
And do you find that you said that when she was lying on her back, she was having a hard time turning on her abdominals?
Yeah. She's had a couple abdominal surgeries in pregnancy. She's thrown her back out. She's naturally curved there, although she loses her curve when she goes on her back.
Mm-hmm.
She efforts more on one side of her body, and she really is disconnected to a lot of her low belly. Strangely, she injured herself recently.
Mm-hmm.
She bruised a rib and was off for 6 weeks, and she's back with me, and it's awesome. She's totally reset. It's been great. She's talking to me. She's like, my abs are sore. I'm like, Laura, you would kind of tell me you couldn't really feel that
mm-hmm.
before.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
But
there's a few times where we worked supine and it would hurt her, but I just found that she worked really well standing on her feet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, and nothing wrong with that, right, at all. Because she's going to be spending more time on her feet functionally throughout life, right? Where she's actually required to do something than on her back anyway.
That's how I kind of thought about it too. I mean, I was kind of bummed, like, what have I figured out? But then I thought, well, I think I've heard someone say, you gotta go to someone where they are.
Yes.
Approach them with where they are right now. And I found that she was the strongest there. So, that was my go-to with her.
Yeah.
That's kind of there.
Yeah. And have you found, I don't know since she's been off, but have you had the experience yet of the work that you're doing with her in those more ideal conditions? Are they influencing her work supine, like just say in footwork or something like that?
I have been afraid to go beyond what I had done with footwork. She just went. She just has a habituated pattern, so she's pulling the left side of her back, and footwork would always do it to her. And she comes to my class, and I can't monitor as much in class, and she kept pulling it in her back, and footwork, so I've been putting her on the wedge.
Mm-hmm.
Totally fine. She works great for her. She actually can feel more of her abdominals when she does that.
Putting her on the wedge so that her tail is elevated.
Yeah.
Yes. Excellent. Yeah, sure.
She's also got really tight hamstrings, too, this person.
Uh-huh, yeah. Okay.
But that totally worked for her and kept her in class, and keeps her in class, and I don't have to babysit her the whole time.
Uh-huh. So when she's doing footwork, you have her on the wedge. And is that eliminate her left pain, her left-sided pain?
Yeah. Yeah.
Great.
Because it seems like every time she would do footwork, she would be, like, grabbing her back afterwards. Like, oh, no.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Great. Yes. Thank you, Rachel. That's really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, yes, it comes down to this idea of you cannot force your student to be somewhere they're not. You cannot force them into working in a way that you feel like they have to work because that's just the way we do it. Like working footwork or feet and straps or just any number of things in neutral because that's just the way that we are supposed to do it, right? If a body cannot do that without pain, they will never likely have the experience of being able to do that without pain, unless we need to really meet them where they are and take one tiny step. The example I used, I think on Saturday, was that if you're sitting in a chair on one side of the room, and the door is on the other side of the room, there's no, unless you can fly, there's no way to get from the chair to the door unless you step, take a step, or stand up, and then take one step, right? And so, it's for me, the analogy is like, well, if the body cannot find and maintain neutral in movement, right, anatomical neutral, there is no way the body will ever learn how to do that if we keep forcing it out the door, right, to make it out the door from the seat instead of just standing up and taking that one tiny step. So, what else? Anybody else? Some thoughts or questions or ideas?
Chantel?
Yeah.
This is Santa.
Mm-hmm.
I realized when you were describing how you find neutral that I was just teaching it yesterday to somebody, and I kind of approached it a little more from the pelvic tilt, going from pelvic, the pelvic tilt, and then kind of a heavy sacrum, and a little bit more internally,
mm-hmm.
A place where you can feel that the abdominals naturally engage,
uh-huh.
and the hip bones kind of move toward each other. So I'm just thinking, like, sometimes the descriptions are more out-of-body and shape-oriented if the instruction is more intrinsic,
mm-hmm.
that maybe that would guide the student to more internally to find what feels balanced to them.
Sure. Sure, yeah. I mean, I think, we're talking about helping somebody identify neutral for themselves is one hurdle, right? And I used that idea of the hip bones and the pubic bone because that's a balanced body thing. Certainly what I learned, too, in the beginning as one way to get people to find neutral. It's not the way I typically do it anymore. But it's very easy for people to identify their bones, right? You just put your hands there.
But they don't feel it. It's not a feeling experience.
Right. So it's just one piece, right? It's just one tool that we can use.
Right.
But certainly, and my point was, doesn't always get us where we want to go anyway, right? It's not necessarily going to bring us to that functional neutral. So certainly, another way is the whole realm of what you're describing, which is to get them to feel where the weight is, right? Shifting back and forth from anterior to posterior, tilted pelvis, feeling the weight on the base of the sacrum and towards the tail, feeling the weight toward the low back, and then finding the place where the weight is evenly distributed, finding the place where they feel activated, right, in a certain area or in a certain way. All of those things are great, and you're right, totally. A more felt sense experience is going to be one that they're going to be able to recreate for themselves more readily.
And maybe less likely to hurt themselves or something, or I don't know.
Potentially. But I think the issue with this case study is that
she was being forced.
Well, not only that, not anymore, right? She was, but now she's got this new teacher, and the challenge is that this body really can't even be in a safe, neutral position on her back.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
don't go there.
Exactly.
Can I jump in a minute?
Yes, please.
It's Julie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My thought too was that, you know, in addition to the lordosis, if the kyphosis really exaggerated, that it may be pretty impossible for her
correct
to be in that position when she's supine and that, you know, working standing or on all fours, you know, finding that the length in the spine when she's not supine.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Is a good place to start anyway.
Yeah. Right. Totally true. I mean, and it goes back to what Rachel is saying is, you know, it's like if you can't get the body to find it, right, to access a position, an alignment, a muscle activation in a position, there is absolutely no reason to beat it to death, right? It's like just get the body in the most optimal position so that they can have an experience of progress, right, of aligning differently, of aligning more efficiently. And that's ultimately, I think, what the whole thing comes down to, this idea of, you know, meeting our students where they are, is looking at the method as a whole, as a beautiful whole. And if we just use it, it works really well. But we certainly cannot force our students into it, right, in the way that we feel like, well, this is the way it's supposed to be done, or this is the way I was taught, and I, you know, we have to be willing to see that the body is incredibly complex, and if it's not working, it's not working, right? Change it. Don't force it to do something that it really can't do. So yes, working in a position where the body can align better or have greater ease or have greater access. And then as Rachel was saying too, and as you're saying, Julie, it's then a matter of like, well, can we get the body in a different orientation so that we can ask it to make differentiating movements, right? So it can, like in standing, perhaps that she has more understanding of where the pelvis is or where her head and neck are or how her shoulders are, you know, placed. Like where can the body most effectively find itself? Right, so that those movements and those corrections are coming from an internal perspective, right? An awareness of the body itself rather than just from the outer experience of the teacher telling you where you should go or what you should do or what you should be feeling, which is so often the case.
This is Bonnie. Could I make a suggestion?
Yes, please. Go for it.
And it's very similar to what you folks have been saying about, I would say not be so focused on neutral right now with her. Get mm-hmm. her to move, bring her into other positions, all fours, standing like you've suggested, and just doing some nice the release work with the ball rolling, the yamana,
mm-hmm.
The breath work. If we start to work on her chest and open her up, that might just start to release some other things in her body that will help her find that position.
Absolutely.
Of more neutral.
Yeah. Absolutely. And one thing you and Julie have both brought up, which we didn't end up talking about on Saturday, but if the kyphosis is any kind of troubling or troublesome at all, it will perpetuate the lordosis, right? You're not going to effectively change the lumbar spine unless there is equal, if not greater, change happening in the thoracic spine. So really good points to address that stretch and release point of view. What I've been talking about recently is priming the body, right? Releasing, opening, hydrating before asking it to make any kind of alignment shifts. And working on the breath is certainly going to perpetuate that long, you know, lengthwise on the roller, shoulder, arm release, chest opening, extension over the arc, extension over the big ball, over a over ball, the medium sized balls. Great stuff, you guys. Anybody else? Questions, thoughts?
Well, I have another thought about if she does want to work, it's Julie.
Uh-huh.
If she does want to work in supine, or if you want to get her in supine, that putting an overball, like a semi-deflated overball, under her sacrum, would that be, you know, one way to mitigate the pain level and to kind of get more abdominal engagement without bothering the lumbar spine as much?
Well, potentially, my concern even with a deflated overball is it's going to create too much instability. Because she's hypermobile, so she's going to maybe have a lack of intrinsic stability anyway, which is typically the case. My suggestion on Saturday was work her full out in imprint, like with a wedge, as Rachel described, with a wedge under the entire tail sacrum and even the lower part of the low spine. So she has to work in an incredibly supported, imprinted position. For me, what I said on Saturday, I think one of the places I would go, you know, and all of this is so hypothetical, so we never know how the body is responding, so it's hard to say. But it would be like, if she's used to living in this lordotic position, so much so that for a very thin, you know, small statured person, her belly is protruding constantly. One of my goals would be release the hip flexors, roll out the quadriceps, and get her just really familiar and comfortable with that sense of releasing into the back body. Get the back body to open and feel like what it's like to experience decompression and length. And so I would create as much of a wedge as I needed to, so that with very, very minimal to no effort, she could stay imprinted completely. And then I would start to work around that and see how the body was responding, and but something stable and something not super soft but not firm either, because I would want it to perpetuate this sense of release and relaxing into the back body and into the mat. Given that, with that said, I would be mindful of whether or not the glutes were activating too much to create that imprint, which is why you'd want to pad her enough, have enough of an angle in the wedge so she didn't have to tuck herself, right? Because then for most people, that's going to be a posterior engagement, like around the anus and the adductors and in the glutes, in a way that's really not going to facilitate what we're looking for. So that's what I would do. But you're on the right track, Julie.
Okay.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
I mean, my other thought was in working in standing, the other benefit of that is that it gives her a better sense of her center of gravity, because with the spinal curve, her center of gravity is going to be off.
Yes.
And just being able to move, being mindful of where that center of gravity is, will give her a better sense of where, you know, basically where her center is.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Gravity, just gravity being at play, you know, in standing versus supine, it's much more relative just to the design of the skeleton. And it's going to be easier, easier for her to find the lower abdominal connection in standing. And that's, you know, similar to Rachel, the experience that Rachel's having. So, yeah, definitely agree with you there. All right. Anything else? Any other thoughts about this? Are we gonna leave her in the wedge position forever? Anybody have a sense of that?
No, maybe not.
Yeah. So, your intention is what? Yes, this is just the way this body has to work forever, or your intention is over time. We're moving her toward what?
More of a lumbar curve.
Well, she's got a lot of lump. Oh, you mean yes, in the position, right? A balanced curve.
Yes. Sorry. Excuse me. Yes. Less of the less lordosis, less kyphosis.
Yeah. So.
So maybe it's not. You know, it's not gonna. Maybe it's not gonna be completely rectified, but it's where she's got some strength throughout the whole length of the spine and not parts where she's like, it just sounds to me like it's you know, tight and weak.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah. So my point in asking the question is just to be a little bit of a, stir things up just a little bit, because it's important to continue to meet our students where they are, but to not get complacent. So, you know, my question with Rachel earlier about, well, given that you're doing more with her sitting and standing, do you notice that there is a difference in her supine activation? And, you know, that's a tricky situation when you're working with somebody primarily in a class situation where you can't, you know, maybe be investigating as much as possible. There's obviously in that case something going on, you know, diagonally between the right and left sides, as Rachel was saying. But the intention for me as the teacher of this case study body that we're talking about is that as she develops, as she's able to elongate the spine in general and gain more access to that deep core strength, that I'm going to attempt to lessen the support, lessen the wedge, take the wedge away, get her in some more dynamic positions where we can play with the placement of the wedge. So just say that so that we can keep in mind that we are always trying to progress our students as much as possible, you know, within the scope of what we can do, you know, if it's a private, if it's a group class. But I want you to have the mindset of when you use a prop, that it is a temporary solution for most people, right? That the goal always is to eliminate or reduce the prop support over time. Yeah.
And Chantel, it's Charlene.
Yeah.
So would you like, so I'm just thinking you'd have a way of maybe assessing their strength or their form or some way, like to take that away periodically. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. So I'd be monitoring their progress in all the other, you know, positions, right? So when I start to see that there is progress, right, the activation comes sooner, it can be sustained longer, I can add weight or tension to an exercise, they can do, you know, if I'm doing mat work that they can do, you know, maybe it's that they can now, they've they have the endurance to do all five abdominal exercises, you know, the Ab 5 series in a row yeah. without needing to rest or experiencing pain. I'm looking for those signs that tells me that progress is being made. And then, you know, what we've talked about a lot over the last, you know, 6 months or so, tracking and assessing, is that I would have picked out at least one primary exercise to be my benchmark, right? My test and my retest. So
yeah.
Let's say it's footwork, right? So it's a supine position. We know this is the most challenging position for her. I know that, you know, from day one, I've had to pad her up into a totally posterior position. And then let's say at month two or three, I'm noticing some real shifting and changing. I'm noticing she's walking differently, potentially her posture is different. She's able to do all of these other things with much more strength and for longer periods of time. I'd bring her back. I'd use footwork, and I would just take a moment to pad her less, right? I would reduce the wedge, and I would put her in a position that where she had to work to maintain the neutral. We're still not talking about, right? It's baby steps. So we're not talking about like take the pad away altogether and have her do, you know, overhead arms with tabletop legs, but just reduce the padding, reduce the wedge, and see what the experience is like. What do you see? Is she more stable? And then asking her, you know, what's the experience? Are you able to do that without discomfort? So that's what I would do. You know, find that one exercise or group of movements that would be your benchmark so that you could be testing and retesting that over the long run to see if things are really improving in the most challenging position. Does that help? Does that make sense to you, Darlene?
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And that was my thought process too. I'm just kind of confirming that I'm on the right track.
Sure, sure. Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Good. Good, good. Okay. Well, any other thoughts about that? Good. Great. Well, it's a good case study, I think, because, you know, obviously it's not uncommon. Many of you have dealt with similar situations. But I think one of the big takeaways for me on Saturday, just having this conversation, you know, with some other of the teachers, was that we have to be very thoughtful about not, you know, of really just letting things be what they are and find a way to work from there, right? Always holding a strong intention or goal in mind about trying to bring more balance to the body, but that it's not always going to look the same way for everybody. And it's not always going to be the same process for everybody, you know, and neutral is one of those things, you know, it's one of the very first things we teach. It's one of the things that we can become fairly attached to in terms of, achieving it or arriving at it for our students. And honestly, it's kind of a big deal, and it takes time for most people to find how to be malleable in that neutral position and integrate it, you know, in all of these various ways, sitting, standing, kneeling, sideline. So certainly supine is not the only way. It's really not. I mean, maybe we've already really established this, but I'm going to reiterate it anyway, that teaching neutral supine is like kind of ridiculous. I mean, let's face it. I mean, in my opinion, because the spine is immediately compressed downward, right? So for a lot of people, the action or effort that it takes to find neutral means that they have to anteriorly tip the pelvis, not in this case study situation, but for most people, with more effort than they would ever need to in some of the other more relevant functional positions like sitting and standing. So, and this, sometimes just perplexes me as to why I myself get very caught in this, like, oh, well, I bring a student in, I lie them down on the mat, teach them anterior posterior rocking, pelvic clocks, pelvic circles, yada, yada, a little bit of ribcage breathing, and expect that somehow this is really like, this is the optimal place to do that. So perhaps it's just a chance for us to consider that don't teach neutral lying down, right? Teach neutral sitting up on a big exercise ball where there's plenty of movement, right? Movement of the ball underneath the pelvis actually stimulates the movement, right? Because of that instability, and see where that takes us. So, any last thoughts or comments on that, everybody?
Well, it's Darlene again. I feel like, yeah, the whole neutral where you're laying down with the footwork, it's actually always been kind of a bit of a challenge for me, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of feel like if I have to be really, like, soft with it, because if I do it too rigidly, then, you know, it really kind of hurts my tailbone a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know. I almost feel like, for me, what I've noticed in the little time I've been teaching is that I just don't make a huge deal about it.
Mm-hmm.
I just tell people to really keep tone and not to be, like, obviously, like, really pelvic tilting and pushing that way.
Yeah.
But I just don't, I feel like it's working pretty well doing it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's interesting. I guess it's a bit of intuition too with each person.
Yeah.
And just kind of looking at them and how they're moving. But,
right.
Just because I had that experience that it was pretty painful for me to be in neutral.
Yeah.
That I just kind of keep it soft, but just try and, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, totally.
Making sense. I don't know. So
you are.
I almost feel like, so is it more important just to keep tone in your abdominals and to keep not, like, pelvic tilting, pushing through that way?
Well, I think it's a great way to put it. I really like that cue of just finding softness in the back, but keeping tone through
mm-hmm.
the core.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you'll see when people are over efforting, you'll see, you know, one of the things I'm always really looking at is how well are the joints moving, the bony rhythms, right? So when there's a sense of ease in, like, the hip creasing and uncreasing and creasing and uncreasing and the knee folding and unfolding and the ankle folding and unfolding, that means that, that's what I'm looking for, right? Because then if I know that there's some ease in the joints and the bony rhythms of the body, then I know that there's going to be more of a balance in terms of the effort. The other, just last thing I'll say about this, because we've just passed our hour mark and I don't want to hold you all captive, but I mean, I wish I could, but I won't, is that when you're doing footwork specifically, right? And of course, this doesn't apply to just lying supine and doing, like, you know, not so much when you're doing, like, a knee fold or a toe tap, but absolutely 100% your pelvis is anteriorly tipping and posteriorly tipping, and anteriorly it's moving back and forth, which is why this idea of, like, neutral being a fixed position is so ridiculous if you're moving, right? Because so when you bend your knees, your sit bones widen and you're going to experience an anterior tilt. That's where the body wants to go. When you straighten your legs, your sit bones narrow and the pelvis will posteriorly tip, right? So you can't deny it. And when you try to stop it from happening and keep the pelvis rigid, certainly you're going to get a lot of funky stuff happening. Sometimes it's the experience that you're having, Darlene, with there's pain or, you know, discomfort in the tail, you know, too much effort in the low back. Sometimes it can manifest as aching in the hip flexors or tension in the knees. Sometimes it manifests as, like, tension and stress in the rib cage, so an inability to breathe freely. It's really fascinating, but when you lock down the pelvis and expect that it's not going to move at all, during footwork. I think we're a little bit under the wrong impression about what's happening there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that's certainly something, you know, if it's of great enough interest that we can go, we can talk about, continue to talk about, in the forum and even in the February workshop. But thank you for bringing it up, because I mean, that's kind of a whole different, you know, it's a whole other piece of this, or at least a line of thought that runs from what we've been talking about. So, here's what I would like to leave you with, if you guys will indulge me for just a second. And I suppose that if you aren't willing to indulge me, then you'll hang up. But here's the thing. I wanted just to leave you with thinking about something for your own personal practice. And in the mentoring manual, I talk about the habit, establishing the habit of practice. It could be interesting to revisit that section in the manual and really just start to evaluate, like, what's your practice like right now? And what might you want your practice to be right now? We've been talking a lot about one thing. Uh-oh.
Welcome, this sir. You entered 104259. If this is correct, press 1. There are 8 participants in the conference. Please announce your...
I guess I hung up on myself.
There you are.
Yeah, sorry. I don't know what happened. Maybe I'm not supposed to talk anymore. Well, in any case, I was going to read you a passage from this Twilight Tharp book, but I'm discouraged enough now that I'm not going to. Not really. But here is what I would like you all to do. Consider revisiting the piece in the manual. It's toward the beginning on the habit of practice. And choosing one thing to bring to the forefront of your practice. And it doesn't have to be specifically related to Pilates, although it can be. But what would it be like to just choose one thing to bring your full attention to in some way every day? So what I've been working on myself is daily meditation. And my physical practice has changed. So my actual, what I'm doing physically, exercising, you know, Pilates, yoga, etc. I'm still doing that, but it's not my priority. Although I'm trying to make that happen, my absolute dedication is to meditating every day. And just finding so much pleasure and joy in having that single focus of one thing, one small thing I can do, 20 minutes every single day. And I just think it's interesting to consider. And I'm asking you to consider it for yourself. If there is one thing that you can begin to practice every single day, and it doesn't mean you have to do it for the rest of your life or even for an entire month, but maybe just for like this coming week or for a month or 2 weeks. You know, maybe it's just bridging, or maybe it's the 100, or maybe it's footwork, or maybe it's just practicing three-dimensional ribcage breathing every single day. So that's the one thought I want to leave you with. And I just super grateful to have so many of you on the call today. And thank you, Lindsay, again, for just jumping in and being with us. Everybody can come off mute. And we'll say our goodbyes, and I will see many of you on Sunday. And I will be posting this call and the case study notes. So,
Chantel?
Yeah.
Can you post Darlene's address?
Yes, that's on my list for today.
Okay.
Yeah, and maybe Darlene can just do that on the Facebook forum.
Yeah, I'm happy to do that. And maybe also I'll give a little bit of some directives in terms of how to find it.
Sure. Yeah, great. All right, everybody. Okay. Thank you so much. Have a
Thanks
wonderful
so
day.
Much. Look forward to seeing everybody.
All right.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
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 Bye.